This is WNUT Talk on the WNUT Radio Network. WNUT Talk is on the radio. I am Brandon, a.k.a. Stoney. And hey, man, just hang out with me for a bit today, because WNUT Talk is going to be keeping you company for about the next, 30, 45 minutes? I don't know. I never know when I sit down. It just happens. WNUT Talk is where I pick a topic, you know, something that's been on my mind, something that's fascinated me recently or for years or whatever the case may be. And then I just, I do a little research into it, man. I might organize my thoughts a little bit. Sometimes I barely do that. Sometimes I just sit down and ramble at you. And then we see where the afternoon takes us. But today, I have a special topic. I have done some research. I'm also going to be just kind of free form associating a little bit. And that is something that I think not enough people are aware of. When you think about Black Sabbath, when you think about the legendary, groundbreaking, genre-defining band Black Sabbath, you usually think about Ozzy Osbourne fronting that band. You got Tony Iommi on guitar, you got Geezer Butler on bass, you got Bill Ward on drums, and right up front, wearing, you know, maybe a fringed leather jacket of some kind, and some little circle shades with his hair, you know, just parted in the middle, hanging straight down, Ozzy Osbourne commanding the stage. Some people think about, okay, he wasn't the only singer. When he left, who took over? Ronnie James Dio, right? So you had Dio before he was doing stuff like Rainbow in the Dark and Holy Diver and thing, you know, Stand Up and Shout and the Stars benefit that he did, you know, to raise money for Hearing Aid. But sadly, a lot of people don't think about other singers. They have no idea that anybody else even sang for Sabbath. They certainly, a lot of them don't realize how many. And so we're going to go into that today. We're talking about the many lead vocalists of Black Sabbath. Yeah, we're going to talk about Ozzy. We're going to talk about Dio. But we're going to talk about a handful of them that you probably haven't even heard the names of. And even if you are a hardcore Black Sabbath fan like myself, and you've been listening to, buying, collecting the records for 30 years or more, I didn't even know some of these names. And there's some good reasons for that. And we're going to talk about them today on WNUT Talk. So thank you for joining us. If you're joining us on Live 365, there is a 24-hour-a-day live streaming WNUT station. You know you can't rewind it. You can't replay it. It's just happening live in the moment, man. So tune in. Check it out when we're not running a WNUT episode of the flagship show hosted by me and the Great Fishniz, or me and Eric, me and one of my many co-DJs through the years. Then you're just getting a music mix, man. You're getting some of the greatest stuff handpicked from the WNUT collections right here on the shelves, you know, up on the wall, man, on the stacks that WNUT has been accumulating and curating for 30 plus years now. We debuted in January 94, so think about it. That runs the gamut. Or you're hearing WNUT Talk, or Fridays and Saturday nights, you're hearing the Great Fishniz, who's hosting WNUT After Dark, little harder edge music that he's bringing to you, or the Jazz Man with WJAZ, who's bringing you the finest in jazz with his own shimmering personality, who you're sure to fall in love with, and he'll become a favorite of yours as well, just like he's one of mine. It's why I gave him a show, you know, back in 97. The dude is lovable, and if you tune into it, you're going to see that. But you can also stream all this stuff on YouTube, and because we don't play copyrighted music on this particular show, WNUT Talk is free of music that would need to be cleared by copyright or by agencies like ASCAP and BMI. So because of that, we put this on any podcast platform that you prefer. So whether you listen to your podcast on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, YouTube, go to any of those platforms, man. Search WNUT or WNUT Talk. It'll come right up, and you can check out the vast array of topics that we have discussed here on WNUT Talk, and a lot of them are very fascinating. But hey, I've said enough about all that right now. Why don't we get into Black Sabbath? Why don't I take you back to 1970, when, of course, the band put out its debut album, self-titled Black Sabbath, featuring songs like, well, Black Sabbath, or The Wizard, or NIB. You know, very important songs in the history of heavy metal and in the history of this band. And who was right out front leading that band? Like I said, Ozzy Osbourne, the man you know, the man who, when the majority of us think about Black Sabbath, it is his face completing that picture, right? And he went on to sing on seven other albums that they put out in the 1970s, including the follow-up Paranoid, Master of Reality. He sang on Volume 4. I've got copies of these albums in my hands right now, because while I'm talking to you, I love being able to hold the physical thing, look at the artwork, you know, maybe tell you a little something about it that stands out to me. Oh man, moving on from there, we got Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. That's the one, of course, the legendary title track. You're moving on, you got Sabotage. You get into some here that divide fans a little bit. Technical Ecstasy was the seventh one. There's one on here called You Won't Change Me that, in my opinion, is one of the greatest Sabbath tracks of all time. A lot of people don't think about it because it wasn't on the first, like, you know, four or five records. They're missing out, man. And then, you know, wrapping up Ozzy's era with the band, you got Never Say Die, 1978. Most of us agree, not a great record. But hey, there's your eight original Ozzy-fronted Sabbath albums right there. And what a lot of people don't realize is that in between Technical Ecstasy and Never Say Die, he left briefly in 1977 to go begin working on his first solo record, which would wind up being Blizzard of Oz. But he rejoined Sabbath in 1978 to put that final album out, a move that, like I said, perhaps wasn't the best idea, all things considered. But while he was out in 1977, a singer named Dave Walker took over vocal duties, but the band did not record anything with him. Obviously, he did not appear on any albums. There were no singles released. I don't think there's anything that you can find out there by him, other than they did appear on a BBC television show called Look Here, H-E-A-R, Look Here, in January 1978, and they performed two songs. But that is the most that lineup did before Ozzy came back. So Dave Walker is not a name that many fans know, and that is one I didn't even know. I mean, I just knew that Ozzy was with them throughout the 70s, that he left in 79, and, you know, Ronnie James Dio came along. Dave Walker surprised even me. So anyway, a year after Never Say Die, the band kicks Ozzy out, claiming that he had become unreliable and that his drug and alcohol abuse was kind of out of control. And that was something that you would see recur through Ozzy's career. The man was known for doing some crazy shit when he was high, and he would struggle with that for several decades, right? So who came along in Ozzy's wake? You've got a legendary band like Sabbath. They've already got a stack of records out, and some of the greatest and most well-known songs in the history of heavy metal, from like I said, some of the ones on the self-titled album. Looking at Paranoid, we've got everything from War Pigs to Iron Man, of course, the title track Paranoid. Sweet Leaf on Volume 3, you know, coming along, Children of the Grave, Into the Void. So you're looking at a band that it is not going to be an easy thing for them to have somebody come along, step into Ozzy's shoes, and pick up where they left off, so to speak. So what do they do? Well, there was a singer in a band called Rainbow. Rainbow was another project of Ritchie Blackmore, who had played guitar in Deep Purple. And when he left Deep Purple in 1975, before that band went on hiatus not long after, he formed Rainbow, and Rainbow put out three albums with a man on lead vocals named Ronnie James Dio. And Ronnie James Dio was ripping it the fuck up. People had never heard vocals so powerful. Actually, I take that back. I kind of feel like Ronnie James Dio's vocal style was kind of the next evolution of John Fogerty from Creedence Clearwater Revival. If you listen to Fogerty and then you listen to Dio, you can definitely see kind of a connecting thread in there. But nobody had heard it to the extent that Dio was doing it. It was so, so powerful, so epic, so unstoppable. It was the voice that would come to define what metal could be, but not yet. But Black Sabbath saw that. Tony Iommi recognized that, and he got Dio to follow in Ozzy's footsteps and come and join Black Sabbath. And let me tell you something. If you are one of those Black Sabbath purists who go, if Ozzy's not singing, it's not Sabbath to me, you are missing the hell out. I order you to stop what you are doing. At some point today, you've got to look up on Spotify or YouTube or somewhere. Look up the Black Sabbath album, Heaven and Hell, from 1980, and just hit play. Holy crap. I'm not saying it's going to be your new favorite album. I'm not even saying it's going to be on your list. I'm just saying you've got to give this thing a chance. Because if more people who did not realize how timeless and amazing that thing is would just give it a shot, Oh, what a world we could live in. And so, yeah, if you're one of those people, if you haven't listened to Heaven and Hell by Black Sabbath, check it out. That was the first album they put out with Dio on lead vocals, 1980. It's got the three angels on the front smoking cigarettes, just, you know, angels taking a smoke break. Oh, my God. Songs like Neon Nights, Children of the Sea, not to be confused with the grave. The title track, Heaven and Hell, Die Young. This thing was handed down by the metal gods for Black Sabbath to have a second shot at what they had been working on before Ozzy left. It's almost like, I know this is not the same kind of situation. I'm comparing apples and oranges a little bit here. But you had a band, AC/DC, who lost a lead singer. This time he passed away. It was not the same as Ozzy just leaving. But Bon Scott was no longer with us. And what were they going to do? How were they going to recover from somebody with that sort of a voice? They went and found Brian Johnson, who could do something similar but different, and could do something in an arena that very few people were able to accomplish. I don't mean like a physical arena, like performing an arena show. I just mean in the hard rock and heavy metal arena, you know, kind of in the pantheon of metal singers or hard rock singers. He was able to do something that very few people are able to do that band needed. And that's what happened here. There's a lot of bands that weren't able to make this happen. Black Sabbath certainly was. So we're going to talk a little bit more about Dio and the army of singers who came behind him, who were just waiting in the wings, right after this word from our sponsor, so don't go away.
I am the Urinator, and you're listening to WNUT, streaming around the clock, just like me. Get it? You know, because I'm the Urinator.
Best music, best talk, WNUT.
You are back on WNUT Talk. We are sitting here, WNUT, talking about Black Sabbath and the myriad of singers who have fronted that band, who have performed, who have been the voice of Black Sabbath, of Tony Iommi and crew. And we had just gotten to Dio and the Heaven and Hell album. I believe I was imploring you, if you were one of those people who is an Ozzy or nothing kind of purist, and you just won't listen to anything that doesn't have Ozzy's voice on it. If it's Black Sabbath, it's, you know, it's got to be Ozzy to be Sabbath. Just listen to Heaven and Hell. Oh my God, please just take a moment, find it streaming somewhere and hit play, and just might change your mind, just might change your opinion on things. Dio would be with Sabbath for a couple more years after that. They were going to put out the Mob Rules album in 1981, not as good as Heaven and Hell. I listened to the Mob Rules a lot less than I listened to Heaven and Hell, though ironically that was the first Dio-fronted Sabbath album I ever had. I certainly loved it when I got it, but Heaven and Hell, man, if I got one in one hand and one in the other, the Heaven and Hell side of the scale is always going to, you know, dip down a little lower. It's always going to be the heavier, the more powerful one to me. But the Mob Rules is pretty good too, of course. And then they worked on this live album called Live Evil. And accusations would begin to surface where Tony Iommi claimed that Dio was actually sneaking into the studio at night after the band had gone home and remixing his vocals to be louder on that live album. And he also had felt that Dio began to grow more independent and demanding as the fans began to really take to him and take to this new version of Sabbath. And so this kind of led to Dio quitting in frustration. He really didn't like, of course he didn't like the accusations, but he kind of didn't like the friction that was starting to form between him and some of the band members. And so like Ozzy before him, he went on to make some records on his own that were a gift from the gods of rock and roll. The band was just simply called Dio. Holy Diver was the first one, and holy shit, every single one for several years was incredible, amazing, indispensable. We're going to get to some more of them here in just a little bit and how they tie into a future Sabbath project with Dio, because like Ozzy and Frosty the Snowman, Dio would be back again someday. So who sang for Sabbath next? That's right. This is where we kind of get off into uncharted territory for a lot of fans. The ones who know about Dio often don't follow the story from there. They have no idea what in the hell happened after Dio came and went. But I mentioned a band earlier named Deep Purple, right? And Deep Purple's singer was a man named Ian Gillan. And like I said, that band was on hiatus. They had kind of broken up in about 76, 77, somewhere in there, disbanded. I think even before that, Ian had left the band. I think he had turned it over to some other singers and stuff. But Ian was a friend of Tony Iommi. And he listened to the pitch. Tony was like, just come sing with Sabbath. We're going to call it something else. It'll be a super group, whatever. You know, it doesn't have to be Black Sabbath. We just need to put a band together. We need to work together. You need to come and write some songs with me. We're going to record some stuff in the studio. We're going to put out a record together. And so Ian was sold. He came and did it. And of course it wound up coming out as a Black Sabbath album. The record label was not going to let that happen without being able to say, look at this version of Sabbath that we have. It's Deep Purple and Sabbath together. Oh my God. They had done it before with Rainbow, and now they were able to market this back catalog of albums that had Dio singing on them as he got successful in his own band, right? So a third version of Sabbath with the lead vocalist from Deep Purple? Are you kidding me? Of course they were going to call that Black Sabbath. They put out the album Born Again in 1983, and man, let me tell you, it still divides fans to this day. It features the three other original Sabbath members again for the first time since Heaven and Hell. So you got Iommi, Butler, Ward, and Ian. And on tour, Gillan had some difficulty remembering the lyrics to old Sabbath material that he did not sing on, and Ward actually described feeling disconnected from the kinds of lyrics that Gillan was writing on the new material. So in 1984, after his second tour with the group, he left. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's a bad album. I'm also not going to say it's a great album. It's great in places. It's not so great in other places. It blends sounds that I don't think fans were ready to hear. And, you know, there's a reason that it is not kind of hailed by fans today as one of the finer outings that band blessed us with, right? So Ian Gillan is out after the one album he does with the guys. And here, we kind of get a repeat of the Dave Walker episode from like 1977. I said that he had stepped in between the last two Ozzy albums. A lot of fans don't even know Dave Walker was part of Sabbath. That's going to happen here. Two singers came along after Ian Gillan. One was Ron Keel from a band called Steeler that had Yngwie Malmsteen on guitar. But after he recorded some demos with the band, he had a falling out with the producer. Ron went off and he left and started a band called Keel, kind of like Dio had left and formed a band called Dio. Keel was not as successful as Dio, but Ron Keel, great vocalist in his own right. I've definitely enjoyed some of his albums through the years. And then a guy named Dave Donato would come along. Now, today, Tony Iommi downplays how official Dave Donato was as a hired vocalist for Black Sabbath. He, in fact, Tony claims that he's only listed as a former Sabbath member because Kerrang! Magazine came out to interview the band around that time and Donato happened to be there. And a photo of the group with him in it got published in the magazine. And so, voila, you got this lineup of Sabbath, right? That's official now because that happened. However, there were at least four demo songs recorded with Donato singing. And in 2006, a rehearsal tape of this lineup with Dave Donato did leak, and that had been produced by legendary rock producer Bob Ezrin. So on some level, you got to admit, Dave Donato was a pretty official member there to some degree. But anyway, it didn't work out, and after he was out, probably sensing the writing on the wall, after Ozzy and Dio's high-profile vanishings, Ward and Butler, they pieced out too. So you got the drummer and the bass player. They just went, we're not Sabbath anymore. This is not working. We've tried a couple of reboots. You know, the Dio one was obviously good, but it wasn't meant to be. Born Again was kind of a misstep. And so they disappeared. And around this time, at the suggestion of Black Sabbath's manager, Don Arden, who just happens to be Sharon Osbourne's father. Yeah, he was still managing the band after Ozzy had gone away and started his own very successful career. And his daughter was Ozzy's wife and manager. But anyway, that's a whole other story. We could talk about that for several podcasts. So Iommi begins writing and working together at Don Arden's suggestion with a singer named Jeff Finholt. And the thing that Jeff Finholt had been famous for was originating the role of Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar on Broadway. Now, I've got a great book on Black Sabbath. It focuses on the after Ozzy years. So after Ozzy leaves, that's when this book picks up and kind of talks about the years where Iommi was trying to keep this band going, right? It's called Never Say Die. And this book suggests that as Iommi was planning to put out a solo album at this time, what he was working on was not going to be a Sabbath album. But the book suggests that maybe Jeff Finholt didn't know that. Maybe they didn't like explicitly tell him that. And he believed in earnest that he was the new Sabbath singer. So, you know, the reason he's even being discussed here is because of what happened with that album. Some fans are going to say, no, this does not count as him being a Sabbath singer. Some fans are going to say, yes, it does. but clashes with Don Arden, including what Finholt describes as a physical argument. I mean, they got into a fist fight, right? And with Iommi, he was disagreeing over the lyrical content that Iommi had been developing. And so Jeff Finholt left. He was out. Again, didn't record an album, didn't go on tour. And so there you go. After the last recorded lineup of the band, you've already had three singers come and go and no new material. Well, here's a little footnote. Ozzy came back in July 1985 to do Live Aid, right? The big, big charity concert that was held on two different continents. That was just a one-off show, though. Okay, the original Sabbath members got together. They played three songs. It didn't lead to any other things. They didn't reunite. They didn't record new stuff. They didn't do a tour. They literally just got together, and they did Live Aid in the summer of 85. So that happened, and then life moved on. Iommi turns his attention back to the solo album again. He's still working on these tracks that he wants to put out under his own name. And at that time, he brought in Glenn Hughes, who is another Deep Purple singer. And Glenn Hughes had actually replaced Ian Gillan when Gillan had left Deep Purple. But here's why I was saying some fans would consider Finholt a Sabbath singer because of what happened with the record. Record company pressure again caused Iommi to release the album under the Black Sabbath name, which neither of them were happy about. Neither Glenn Hughes nor Tony Iommi. The album was called Seventh Star, and on the cover it actually says Black Sabbath featuring Tony Iommi, which is pretty fucking stupid because every Black Sabbath album in the history of that band has featured Tony Iommi. He was the one member that never left at any point. So, of course, it features Tony Iommi. But anyway, Seventh Star comes out. Seventh Star actually got pretty good reviews, but Glenn Hughes didn't last terribly long on the tour. He was having some poor health issues coming up. He was struggling with his weight. He also got into a fight with a member of the crew. This one was production manager John Downing, and Downing actually broke Hughes's orbital bone. So he breaks a bone in his face fighting with somebody in the entourage of Sabbath. And, you know, his voice was already suffering. This was just the icing on the cake. So Glenn Hughes was out. But I'm here to say, every time I go back and listen to Seventh Star, yeah, it's kind of dated. You know, there's some very 80s production on it. Some of the songs, they're certainly not what you would expect Sabbath to put out, but again, that's because this wasn't necessarily going to be a Sabbath record when it was recorded, so when you keep that in mind, the pieces kind of fit. I really like the record. When you look at it from the context of what was going on in music at that time, when you look at it as just an offshoot, something that Tony Iommi wanted to do that was separate from this other thing, pretty cool album. And Glenn Hughes' vocal style is very soulful. Yeah, he's a very rock and roll singer, but he's also got this kind of like soulful depth to what he can do that other singers that you've heard performing with Iommi just didn't do, or in a way that they didn't do. I'll put it that way. So hey, when you get a moment, check out Seventh Star. I'm not as adamant about this as the Heaven and Hell thing. I'm just saying, Seventh Star might be kind of a hidden gem somewhere that you might not have knew existed, or you might not have expected to speak to you in the way that it just might be able to do. But anyway, so that's Seventh Star. And like I said, a year later, Glenn Hughes is already out. So what is a Tony Iommi to do? Well, you know, he wants to work on Black Sabbath again. He wants to properly do a Black Sabbath album. Technically, the album that they had just put out came out as Black Sabbath, but you know what I'm saying. He wants to really give it an honest go. So he brings in a singer from a band called Rondinelli, and the singer's name is Ray Gillan. And not to be confused with Ian Gillan, it's spelled differently. And he and Ray Gillan begin the recording of the next album. This time, like I said, properly billed as Black Sabbath. It's going to be called The Eternal Idol. But Gillan turned out to not be much of a songwriter, and there were some financial strains going on, you know, at this time with a group that, while they were a powerhouse at one point, and they certainly are still one of the most influential bands in all of hard rock and heavy metal, they've been having a lot of misfires of late, and the band's maybe not communicating as well as they should be. And right as they are finishing the album, I mean, they're putting the final touches on this bad boy, Ray Gillan and the drummer Eric Singer, who would later perform in Kiss, they both leave the band. So what the fuck? You've got this album almost done. Now your singer's gone. You want to talk about a string of bad luck? I don't know how Tony Iommi at this point wasn't just going, burn the whole thing down. I don't ever want to do Sabbath again. But he makes a move that I'm a big fan of. He brings in one of my favorites, a guy named Tony Martin. And let me tell you, he's not for everybody, but there is something about Tony Martin that speaks to me, and I am a fan. I will preach the gospel of Tony Martin until the day I die. Tony Martin had been a member of the band The Alliance, and The Alliance had had some tracks featured on the BBC's Friday Rock Show, and they had been recording some demos to try and get a deal, and the demos were getting a lot of buzz on the rock and roll scene, and there was a lot of talk about what the future of this group could be. And then one day, his manager, Albert Chapman, takes him to this meeting where he's going to audition as a vocalist and see how he vibes with this unnamed musician. And that musician turns out to be Tony Iommi. So Tony Martin, you got two Tonys now, Tony Martin re-records the vocals on The Eternal Idol that Ray Gillen had already laid down before he left. So now you've got a finished album, and you've got it with a singer who is still there. And The Eternal Idol comes out at the end of 1987. And for the first time since Ronnie James Dio, the band has a singer that lasts for more than one album. And in fact, Tony Martin would wind up being the longest serving singer to Black Sabbath besides Ozzy himself. Whew. All right, so we have gotten through all the singers now. So episode over, right? There's nowhere left to go from here. Man, hell no. This is only half the story. We've made it through all the singers. We're at Tony Martin. Should be the end, but it ain't. Because now, just about everybody who's been the band's vocalist at some point gets to play musical chairs. And we will talk about how that game goes right after this word from our sponsors.
Hey, man, this is the Jazz Man. And you are laid back listening to WNUT, you groovy cats.
Kids playing radio for 30 years, WNUT.
You're back live with WNUT Talk here on WNUT. Before the break, we were just talking about how Tony Martin came in as the new Black Sabbath vocalist to save the day. He re-recorded the vocals that Ray Gillen had put down on the Eternal Idol album before he left. So they finished that album with Tony Martin. They put it out, and all was right with the world, right? They got a lead singer now, and he's going to last for a while. But the album didn't sell super well, and the label had not been a fan of all the turmoil that had been going on for 4 or 5 years at this point, going all the way back to, you know, the disagreements they were having with Dio and all the accusations that were flying around when the Live Evil album was being mixed. So the band's label, which is Vertigo in the UK, it's Warner Brothers in the US, they drop Black Sabbath. So Black Sabbath, for the first time, they're without a label. Man, doesn't stop the party for a second. They get signed by IRS Records. They go in and they put out two more albums with Tony Martin, Headless Cross, which is one of my favorite Black Sabbath albums. It is a bit 80s at times, but come on, so is a lot of the stuff Ozzy was putting out. And let me say, I think Headless Cross actually holds up better than some of that Ozzy stuff does when you listen to it today. Not long after that was the Norse mythology-inspired Tyr album, T-Y-R. I've heard that pronounced a few different ways. Some people just say T-Y-R. I call it Tyr. And after Tyr, that's when the game of musical Black Sabbath former lead singers gets to commence. So in 1990... happening kind of outside of the Black Sabbath orbit, at one of Dio's shows, bassist Geezer Butler, formerly of Black Sabbath, had reunited with Dio on stage to perform the song Neon Nights, which was from the Heaven and Hell album. And the two of them started talking about, you know, the good old days, and they started talking about some of the things that they never got to do as a band, and they decide it is time to reunite the Dio lineup of Black Sabbath. Tony Iommi doesn't know this at the time, but Geezer Butler and Dio have decided that that's going to happen. So they go and they pitch the idea to Iommi. Iommi is for it. And Iommi breaks up the current lineup of Sabbath, including Tony Martin. He dismisses the guys and he reunites the Dio era lineup of Black Sabbath. And this was actually the first Black Sabbath that I ever heard, because the song Time Machine that they did in 1992 was used on the Wayne's World soundtrack. And so that was the first one that I ever heard. The first one, I'm sure I heard some Sabbath before that. I'm sure I probably heard Paranoid or Iron Man or some of the countless other timeless, you know, indispensable tracks they had put out. But the first time I was aware of sitting down listening to Sabbath, it was the Dio lineup that did Time Machine on the Wayne's World soundtrack. It was when they reunited at this time. And the album they put out was called Dehumanizer. And it was the band's most successful record in a decade, though it did meet with mixed reviews. But there are a lot of Black Sabbath fans who love that album, love the sound of it, love kind of the direction they took. And when Dio would leave the lineup again, he actually continued the sound and the themes from the Dehumanizer record on his band's next two releases, Strange Highways and Angry Machines. And so those three records form kind of a spiritual trilogy in the Dio canon, even though one is a Sabbath record and the other two are Dio records. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. How did Dio come to leave again? Well, he quit one night before the band was going to perform at Ozzy's retirement concert in 1992. That's right. The band was going to come and sort of back up Ozzy because he had by this point become the much bigger megastar in rock than Sabbath was anymore. And so Dio was like, I'm not doing that. I'm out. But the band still had two shows to play. So they found a replacement to step in. A lot of people don't know this. Rob Halford from Judas Priest stepped in and performed lead vocals for two nights for Black Sabbath. That is right. Rob Halford fronting Black Sabbath. And a third night would come along 12 years later during one of the Ozzy reunions. But anyway, and then the following year, 1993 rolls along, Tony Martin finds himself back in Black Sabbath. After Dio leaves, here comes Tony Martin, just picks up right back where he left off. So Geezer Butler stays, and the band puts out the album Cross Purposes, which is another one I really like. My two favorites with Tony Martin are probably Headless Cross and Cross Purposes. If you see a Black Sabbath album with Cross in the title, I am a fan of it. I like it. But then they put out another one called Forbidden in 1995. That one had Ice-T rapping a verse on its opening track. So that was kind of a historic first for Black Sabbath, and it never happened again. But anyway, little rap rock for Sabbath before that became big. Now, at the end of 1995, Iommi put the band on hiatus again to make another album with Glenn Hughes. So you go back to the Seventh Star album, which again was not supposed to be Black Sabbath. Iommi and Hughes say, why don't we do it again, man? We've got some ideas for songs. We can go in, record a proper follow-up to Seventh Star. You know, this time we kind of control our own destiny, so we don't have to call it Black Sabbath. But those sessions actually wouldn't see the light of day for nearly 10 years. That would finally come out in 2004. And I'm only telling you this now because, you know, Glenn Hughes technically had been a Sabbath singer because of record label politics. So there is a sequel to that Seventh Star album, if you want to hear it, called the 2004 DEP Sessions. I know, very catchy title. And there's actually a third one called Fused that they did in 2005. So there's a trilogy of Tony Iommi / Glenn Hughes records. But then in 1997, the original lineup, Ozzy, Iommi, Butler, and Ward, finally reunited properly, though a new album would not happen with this incarnation. And we'll get to one that does happen, but there's a technicality. Anyway, they did release a new live album, however, called Reunion, that kind of encapsulated two hometown shows that year in Birmingham, England. And there were two new studio tracks on there called Psycho Man and Selling My Soul that had the original four guys on it. So we did get that, and it was glorious, but come on. All we wanted was a new Sabbath record, and they just wouldn't do it. But, you know, the original lineup would continue to reunite on and off for tours and Ozfest and things like that over the next 8 years, up to about 2005, including one more show in 2004 in Camden, New Jersey, where Rob Halford fronted Black Sabbath again when Ozzy came down with bronchitis. And so he stepped in and delivered the goods. Get it? Because there's a Judas Priest song called Delivering the Goods. But anyway, let's talk about Dio. Dio came back in 2006. Iommi was overseeing a best of the Dio years Sabbath compilation, and they recorded three new tracks with Dio that were included on that compilation called the Dio Years. And then guess what that led to? Another reunion album with the Dio era lineup, though it did not have Bill Ward on drums. They actually had Vinny Appice, who played on the Mob Rules record. So this was a historic Sabbath lineup. Only problem was, in 2009, Sharon Osbourne was taking some legal action over the Black Sabbath name, which would eventually result in that name being awarded to both Ozzy and Iommi 50-50. So if Ozzy was not involved in Sabbath, they couldn't call it Sabbath. He had half ownership to the name. So Dio's back recording a new Sabbath album. They got around it by calling the band Heaven and Hell. And the name of the album was called The Devil You Know, but they credited it to Heaven and Hell as the band name. But make no mistake, every single Sabbath fan refers to that album as a Black Sabbath album called The Devil You Know. Nobody called that tour a Heaven and Hell tour. It was the Black Sabbath reunion tour with Dio. And so the album ruled. The tour was incredible. I missed out on seeing it. I had seen Dio's solo band 5 years before with Anthrax supporting him, but I did not see the Heaven and Hell / Black Sabbath reunion tour. And boy, I still kick myself to this day over it, because then the following year, Dio passed away on May 16th, 2010. And so, you know, I'm so glad that the boys were able to get together and make one more great album. Something that, in my opinion, stands the test of time a lot better than Dehumanizer. And in my opinion, I think even better than Mob Rules. It ain't no Heaven and Hell. Nothing is. But hey, The Devil You Know is a great album. It's a very strong album. And I'm pretty sure that fans are going to continue rocking that one for decades to come. So if you listen to Heaven and Hell and you like what you hear, check out The Devil You Know. You're going to have to look it up as if you're searching for a band called Heaven and Hell. But we know who that is. And then last, possibly last, but certainly not least, Ozzy came back in 2011. The original lineup announced a reunion, though Bill Ward ultimately wasn't going to participate in that for reasons that are still in question. To this day, we don't really know the full story, but most likely it came down to two things: his health and money. And so one final album with Ozzy on vocals was recorded, called 13, which would emerge in, you guessed it, 2013. And it had three of the original members, Ozzy, Tony Iommi, and Geezer Butler. But Brad Wilk, the drummer from Rage Against the Machine, played on that album with the guys. And the band would tour with a fill-in drummer. Bill Ward would not come back and perform with them again. And that was billed as The End. They even put out an EP called The End that had four tracks that were not included on the 13 album. And then in 2017, the band announced that they were done. They were hanging it up. And who could blame them? I mean, at that point, you had nearly 50 years of heavy metal dominance. They had earned it. And then, of course, just this past July, there was the Back to the Beginning concert on July 5th. 2 weeks before Ozzy Osbourne died at the age of 76. So, are all of these considered official Black Sabbath singers? What makes somebody a Black Sabbath singer? Is it that they record an album with them? Is it that they put down demos? Is it a press release goes out and so that makes it official? A photo gets published in a magazine, like with Dave Donato. Who knows? I don't know. But what I do know is every one of these albums that is stacked up in front of me, I got vast stacks here of remastered and expanded and deluxe editions and box sets of Black Sabbath material. And all I can tell you is that I appreciate every single one of these singers that appears on these records. I think all of them did great work. I don't think all of them always did great work. In fact, every one of these singers did work that I don't like. But every one of these singers, I thought, did some spectacular work with Sabbath. And I think that anybody who's not Ozzy gets unfairly overlooked in this band. And I wish, my hope for you guys is that you will go and seek out some of that stuff and have your mind blown by music that you did not know existed, by some very familiar musicians that have probably been a part of your journey throughout your life at some point or another. That's my hope for you. And I count myself beyond lucky that I got way into Sabbath in the mid-2000s when you could still go see the original lineup, which I had the privilege of doing twice. I saw the original lineup in 2004 and in 2005, and I will carry those memories with me until the day I die. This was before everybody had a smartphone, and I know that, like, you always have old guys saying, like, oh, I was just enjoying the moment, and look at these people, you know. But seriously, because I wasn't fiddling with some kind of device like that, I still vividly remember just standing there with, like, probably my jaw hanging open, watching these guys on stage operating like the surgeons they were in rock and roll, with a scalpel fine attack on these tracks that they had given us that had changed music. Oh my God, it's like if I close my eyes, I can still put myself in North Carolina and in Virginia seeing these shows and hearing these songs. And so, you know, we talked about all these singers. That doesn't even touch seven different drummers, five different bass players, at least three keyboard players, and a partridge in a pear tree No, I'm not going to do that episode someday. Don't worry. Or I'm pretty sure that generals would gather in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Yes, it has always bothered me that he rhymed masses with masses, but what can you do? He was a master. I don't think I've got the right to question him at this point. Thank you for hanging out with us today on WNUT Talk as we have discussed the many, the heralded, the unsung, and every corner in between. Lead vocalist of Black Sabbath. Join us next time when God knows what we're going to be talking about. I sure don't know. If you're listening on Live 365, check us out on our YouTube channel at The Real WNUT, where you can stream these shows and many, many more. And if you're listening at WNUT, go to live365.com or download the free Live 365 app and search WNUT for 24/7 around the clock content streaming into your ear holes. I am Brandon, a.k.a. Stoney, for WNUT Talk, saying we will see you next time.